And welcome to the TalkCast Pod Show, the number one show on the internet and the scholars of the anti-life equation. I'm your host and the man who brought this intrepid team together. I am the knight. I am Batlan. I'm joined this week by the master of all shit posts, the Technomancer, Cyborg Neko.
Oh, cool. I have a story in this one.
I know. And everybody's favorite freaky fish guy, the keeper of the Millennium Trident, Aquamartin.
I was really hoping I was going to be Aquaman. Thank you so much, Lenny. Yes,
you are very welcome. I pre-planned these things because I don't want to waste anybody else's time.
Man, every time I ever host one of these, I never go as elaborate as you do. Hell, I always forget our fucking like phrase. You're actually way better at this than I am.
I like this. I enjoy what I am doing, and I appreciate everybody who shows up, especially the people I chat to. So gentlemen, how are you doing this week?
Doing all right, honestly. Yeah.
We've been you know the weather lately. It's been amazing. So
it's lovely. It's lovely today. It was shitty a couple days ago, but overall, like, way better than it was a month back.
Oh yeah. Look, I'll take that shitty weather over February's shitty weather. Oh my god.
Yeah.
I'm in LA. What is this weather you speak of?
All right.
Yeah, you'll know in about like 20 years when everything shifts.
Hey man, you say, what is this weather you speak of? But I remember when it got down, got up to like 114 that one anime expo we were in LA, so.
Oh lord. Yeah, yeah, even the hotel we were staying at struggled to keep up with like the AC and things. Like it was just blazing in there.
Total nightmare.
And not in the good way, not in the normal California way.
Yeah.
So, Martin, since last time you joined us, which, what were we talking about last time?
The Mandalorian, I believe.
The Mandalorian. Since the last time you've dropped in, I've had a little segment called The Roundup, where we talk about, like, little things that I'm not dedicating, like, the whole episode to, but just little nerdy little roundup assortment bits. And honestly, not a lot has happened in the last 2 weeks for me to really focus on. The one thing I can think of, and it's something that on the next TalkCast Pod Show, I want to do a full mid-season check-in on, is that Falcon and Winter Soldier dropped.
Yes.
So rather than, you know, discuss it at length, I'm thinking like we take like a minute here and just say, what did you think about the first episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier, if you've seen it? Because I enjoyed it. I liked the tone that they set. The visual effects are what you'd expect. Very good. And I am intrigued to see where they move forward with this story, especially with, you know, all the thematic things that are going along with it.
No, I really dig. I really dug it. I thought it was a very strong first episode. It didn't like blow me away, but it laid the path for a lot of very interesting ideas. If you haven't watched it, I'm going to avoid spoiling much of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But there was a character that was introduced where I was like, this guy's gonna die in this episode, I don't know who the hell this is. And then I went back and checked, and apparently that character is someone who actually becomes rather important to the Falcon in later storylines. So I completely misjudged that. I was expecting them to be the first person they killed off in the show, but I imagine they're gonna be around for the rest of it.
Yeah, no, I know exactly the guy you're talking about too. Yeah. And yeah. Okay, so there was a lot to like in that first episode. But you're going to hear this a lot from me this episode. I don't mean for it to become a running thing, but the pacing was a little rough. I understand that now that they have these full episodes to work with, they can slow down how they want to tell these stories, and that's cool. Like, sometimes for WandaVision, it worked really well. Other times, it was a little rough. I felt like the pacing in this was a little too slow, a little bit too lackadaisical. I like the fact that I now feel like I know both Bucky and
Sam
way better than I ever did before. That's nice.
Yeah,
but I do feel like there are some scenes maybe that could have, I feel like there was one or two scenes that could have been cut all together and it would have been a little bit paced better.
We can get more in depth on that next time on the TalkCast Pod Show.
Yeah,
but yeah, overall I'm enjoying what we got so far. I look forward to the next two episodes before we chit chat about it.
Oh, there's six episodes? Holy crap.
Yeah, it's gonna be complete mid-season break. Like that's what I'm saying. Like, we're gonna talk about it mid-season and then we'll be able to talk about it post-season. It's a really nice lineup that way. I dig it. The only other thing that really happened was that Square Enix Presents, and aside from annoying Martin by not knowing who the Maestro was on my end, There really wasn't a whole lot to talk about with it. It just kind of happened.
Isn't it Maestro?
It is Maestro, and that makes me angry too.
Good. I'm glad I can continuously infuriate you
God
by
damn it.
not knowing Hulk lore.
Maestro is like famously this. He sees himself as the savior of the world because he decides he's going to just be ultimate dictator in the future. And the old man Logan Hulk that you mistook him for is a guy who lives in a cave and
yep.
is just a monster. You know, he's just a complete like troll.
They look similar.
Do they?
I'd like to point out.
They both have like gray Hulk hair.
You said famously, and I take issue with that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. Yes, you should.
But yeah.
Yeah, the Square Enix thing just sort of happened, and E3 is basically dead now. Long live E3. I don't know. So, yeah, everybody kind of has their own shows, and now we have to figure out which ones are worth watching.
None of them.
Apparently, like, at least this Squenix one didn't have a lot if you weren't somebody that's still among the Marvel players, which, you know, bless those people.
I actually didn't watch any of it. Did they cover, they covered a little bit of Final Fantasy VII, didn't they?
Nope.
Well, no, they didn't really talk much about it at all.
Oh yeah, that was the previous stream, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that was the Sony thing.
I thought they might talk a little bit more about that I think Yuffie.
There was like no Final Fantasy stuff.
Zero Final Fantasy stuff whatsoever. I think like they alluded that they're going to do one early on in the summer at around what E3 time was. So I'm guessing that's going to be the big show talking about
the big show.
The big show talking about all the things that are coming out this holiday season, which will be where they drop the big bombs and talk more about Final Fantasy. So we'll wait for that one, I guess. Other than that, I want to give a huge shout out and thank you to everybody who checked out our newest series, Hiffle, and a big shout out to Devil Artemis for making it so beautiful and wonderful. And I am very excited to continue on with this production as we move forward.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to find out who voiced Frieza in that.
Someday.
So,
handsome fellow.
If anybody didn't notice, and I am, Martin knows, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes.
I was really like trying to get the fucking whole project done because I here's a little insight.
He had to redo the credits, I think, twice.
So this project originally wasn't going to even come out until April. We had to actually fast track it to come out in fucking March because of extenuating circumstances with the short. Our animator on the short has been having troubles with his computer in Blender. And so it's like, well, we got to have something for this showcase. Luckily, Devil Artemis had basically finished the goddamn thing. So with a couple of, you know, alterations and changes just to make sure that everything was nice and polished, we were able to get out just in time. But I had to rush the credits and I forgot to credit Martin. I'm so sorry.
It's all good. It's all good. I totally understood. It happens. How much extra twerking did you have to add to compensate for releasing it early?
25%.
Actually, it was a reduction in twerking because you couldn't get that full jiggle animation in there. Like that's what the couple of weeks shaved off of it.
You had to polish the twerking.
Yeah, sooner or later, technology is going to advance far enough that we're really going to see the bounce of Raccoon's ass.
Mm-hmm. Full bounce of those hams.
Won't rest until that day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, I need to talk to Devil Artemis and just get a 5-minute-long clip of this working and then just post that on the channel. Just post that on the channel. Just like, yeah, no, just an hour.
Here's a screensaver for you.
Just an hour of the Ginyu's twerking. Just as long as I find the loop of it, we're good to go. That's my next project.
And one more little bit of TFS news for those of you who enjoy TFS at the table. I've been working on a role-playing system going by the name of Ready to Roll. Those of you who are patrons or subbed over here currently have access to the beta build through our Discord or over on Patreon. So feel free to check that out. And this Friday, I'll be hosting a one-shot showing off the beta build and just letting everybody see how it plays, how to build characters and things like that, alongside a few members of our lovely team.
Hell yeah, I love D&D.
I love Japan, D&D period.
Gaming! Oh, man. Who in chat gets that deep cut or in the comments?
Oh my god, I want to know who got that fucking reference. That would be amazing.
But yes, check it out this Friday. We'll be starting at 5 o'clock Central Time over here on twitch.tv/stream4star. But fellas, it's time. It is well past time that we talk about the Snyder Cuts.
Oh
my
gosh.
The fabled Snyder Cuts.
That always existed from the very beginning.
It's so weird that we can live it, like that we live in a society that this type of filmmaking, like we actually got this. Like for a long time, it was a joke. It was like, oh yeah, just release the Snyder Cut. Release the Snyder Cut. It's going to be so much different. And to actually get it is absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Like I never expected that. Never.
I will say this. So I am definitely on board with the people who agree. Like, no, this full version, this version as it exists, obviously never truly fully existed.
Yeah.
But I will definitely believe that this vision, that this like where this was supposed to go, I definitely believe that it was much closer to what we actually got. Like I will actually trust that what we got was very close to Snyder's original vision.
I don't like. Oh, do you mean like the original Justice League that Whedon came in and like redid everything?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Oh God, no! I don't think that was close to his well, like.
No. What I'm saying is, I also agree with a lot of people. That this full version, like what we saw, obviously it didn't exist. He got like, what was that, $100 million to like add on 2 whole hours?
A lot of that was actual, like a lot of that budget was sprucing up the visual effects, adding a shot or two here and there. Like you can tell when they reshot Affleck because he had lost so much weight. But a lot of that was to that final half an hour, that like ending scene there that you got. And we'll be getting into spoilers very soon.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I want to address just real quickly because I want a vast majority of this to be about, like, you know, spoiler discussions about the movie. How did you feel about the Snyder Cut, A, as its own individual thing, but B, compared to what we got back in what, 2016?
Martin, as the guest, you may go first.
Well, I'm a big fan of like seeing alternate cuts of films in general, and usually the director's cut or the extended edition usually just means the ending is slightly different, or there are 5 minutes of extra deleted scenes sort of slapped on there. This was possibly the most radically different cut of a film that has been released since like something like Blade Runner, which has remarkably different versions as well. For, again, studio reasons. Now, Justice League, in general, I'm not a DC fan. I'm a Marvel fan, and it's not that I dislike DC. It's not that I dislike DC. It's just that it doesn't appeal to me the way Marvel does. I love the colorful characters. I love bloody Spider-Man. Like, I love Batman, but I'm not a DC person. And so I went into Justice League in general, both the theatrical cut and this cut, being kind of like, well, I don't have any investment in this. I'm watching this as a fan of films more than a fan of these characters and this world. So when the theatrical cut came out back in the day, I didn't really rush to go see it. I waited for like the DVD or whatever. And I watched it and I was very underwhelmed and I forgot about it, I think, a week later. This I've been thinking about since I've seen it, like for one reason or another. I think this is a much more exciting and ambitious version of a film that when it came out in theaters, their only real goal, I think, was to course correct. I think that a lot of the choices they made with the theatrical cut was, we need Superman to be Superman and we need to show these guys starting off as fledgling heroes. Whereas the idea behind the Snyder Cut, I believe, was to tell this epic story that featured the Justice League and highlighted individual members and told their stories individually and as them coming together as a union of heroes to fight an intergalactic epic menace. And the tone of the Snyder Cut is far more appropriate than what they were going for in Whedon's version. As a fan of just seeing different takes on this kind of media and on the same narrative, this, like, the Snyder Cut was a thrill to me, as opposed to, say, the theatrical cut, where I was like, I forgot about it as soon as I saw it.
Yeah,
well, it was said.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Kaiser.
I was just going to say, it was really interesting when I sat down and started watching the film. There was that part of my brain that was like, okay, let's try and compare the differences. And some parts I was like, yeah, that's definitely different. But there were other parts where I'm like, was this in the original? I cannot honestly remember. I notoriously, if anybody has watched, literally, you could watch half of our Talkcast pod shows and you've gotten my opinion on Zack Snyder. It is insane how often when we talk about nerd culture, I end up coming back to shit talking that man and his take on comic books in general, with the very, very fine exception of 300, which I still think, as problematic as it actually is, is a remarkably fun film. Like, if you just turn your brain off and you know, like, you don't take any of it too seriously, it's still a really fun film to watch. I don't like Zack Snyder's interpretation of the DC universe. I absolutely do not appreciate it because it always feels incredibly, aggressively dour. And that's just generally, like, at the end of the day, not what I want out of the DC universe. I want something, I'm okay with Batman getting serious and dark, but I still really crave that bright light, that truth, that optimism, that, you know, the Justice League stands for at the end of the day. After all the violence.
A little too Frank Miller for you in that sense.
Oh, God, Zack Snyder jerks off to Frank Miller all of the time. I mean, there's a reason that Batman versus Superman was so aggressively adapted from The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight Rises, because The Dark Knight Returns, because he really, really likes that interpretation of Batman, which isn't Batman. Like, that is an Elseworlds story. But anyway, my point ultimately is, when I sat down with this particular film, I shed my bias as much as I could. I really did. I'd heard a lot of people saying, like, hey, this movie's actually pretty good. And I was like, okay, I see people who hate Zack Snyder just as much as I do, maybe even worse, saying, okay, no, this was I get this. So I sat down with Quinn. We watched all 4 hours while eating sushi and Dunkin' Donuts. And you know what?
We have a Dunkin' around here?
Yeah. You don't know?
Huh.
Don't mind if I do.
God, shut the fuck up. I blocked that fucking account, okay? But we sat down, we watched all of it, and I legitimately took some joy out of plenty of scenes. And this film is remarkably more consistent. This feels like an actual vision put to screen. Like, it is remarkable just how much more of a complete product this feels in comparison to the theatrical cut. Like, it's insane. And yeah, but spoilers, I still don't think it's good.
Okay, there you go. That's what we're getting around to. you think it is better, but still not good in your opinion.
Yeah. Well, obviously, look, I'm talking about subjective media. I'm talking about like art. If I ever say this movie is objectively bad, unless it like legitimately like is fucking, I don't know. So, like, oh, shit. What's that one Ku Klux Klan movie?
Black Klansman,
like, or... fucking, I forget what it's called. Unless it is like overtly racist.
Oh,
like
actively problematic.
Yeah, I'm never going. Birth of a Nation. Yes, unless it's like fucking like Birth of a Nation, I am not going to say that a piece of art is objectively bad. Okay.
Admittedly, I don't think Birth of a Nation would be made these days.
Well, but you can't make films like those nowadays.
It is very hard to say that this version of Justice League is a good film, though, because I don't really think of it as a film. I think
I didn't either.
Disqualifies it.
I looked at it as a, like, even though it's not really broken up, it tries to be broken up in an episodic structure, but it, like, they don't feel like episodes. I did see it as more of just consuming it's less a film and more of an epic, you know, like you're binging something. You are sitting through a very long piece of media, which Martin and I actually talked about this a little earlier, but this is actually like the streaming format is actually perfect for this, even though I think it would look absolutely gorgeous on an IMAX screen as it's intended to be seen. This is the perfect format for things like this, that long binge-worthy content that people need, especially this year and last year.
I'll say, I'll say this to the fact that it is 4 fucking hours long. I'm really, really glad that it had the chapter markers there. But the pacing of the... So as I said earlier, this is going to be kind of a thing. The pacing of this is shit. Like, as glad as I am that he was able to tell the story that it the way that he wanted to. Oh my God. There are just some parts of this movie that I'm like, okay, we get it. Can we please move on?
There are definitely parts that drag on far too long, but I don't think that that means the pacing is shit. I just think that that means it's the way it wanted to tell the story. Like I said, I think one of the best ways to describe this is an epic. It's not a movie. It's not a miniseries. It is a experience. Like, you are like, he had a vision and he saw it through beat by beat. You don't necessarily agree with every single one of those beats, but you could feel the craft in every single piece that was left in there.
And that's admirable.
Now that's not necessarily to everybody's taste, but I understood what they were going for pretty much with everything. Even if I'm like, oh my God, just fucking cut this. I don't need to see Aquaman standing there to this weird Christian rock song for like 20 minutes as the water floats over him.
I will say, it's like I said, I said this on my own stream because I decided, like, I like getting my thoughts out a little bit before I come on one of these, because there are too many times where I take forever to actually get to my opinion because I'm still trying to work it out. I legitimately felt as if, oh God, what was I?
I don't know.
No. When it came to the pacing stuff, there were just so many scenes with the fucking Christian rock music. But, oh yeah, what I was going to say was, I am not a Snyder fan. Everyone knows that. But if you are a Snyder fan, if you like Snyder's interpretation of these characters, you are going to love this fucking movie. Like, yeah, seriously, this is him kind of at his peak. I won't lie. This is the best version. Like, this is the best interpretation of these characters. He's done.
It's him uninhibited. This is like, they gave him carte blanche to do what he was going to do because they looked at the writing on the wall. They're like, okay, we tried doing what we could here. We might just rewrite everything with the Flash movie. Just do it, man. Just go do whatever the hell you're going to do.
It's interesting.
And as somebody here who probably of the three of us enjoys Snyder's filmography the most, at least in terms of like video to video, I still hate Sucker Punch. I do not know what he was going for there. And like, I'm the guy here that actually still like will defend and enjoy his version of Watchmen. So that's where I'm coming from.
Oh my God. We talked about that, right? Have we ever talked about Watchmen?
We've talked about it. I mean, I did an entire episode with Gon on the miniseries where we talked about it.
Oh man, I would love to argue the shit out of you about that movie because I hate it.
Look, I enjoy it, but there is nothing I have to defend it.
Okay, is that a fair
argument?
No, that's fair. I positively hate his Watchmen, mostly because it comes so close and yet it is so very, very far. It's one of those things where, like, God damn it, if you had just not been in charge of the writing, I legit think that he could have made a good Watchmen movie.
Yeah, unfortunately, the writing was done before you even got there.
Well, actually, no, he wasn't necessarily in charge of the writing. I don't know. He just, I legitimately believe that you know what? We're not talking about Watchmen. I could go there. I'm not going to. What I was going to say was, by the way, some people were asking about the 4:3 aspect ratio.
That's because of IMAX.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally, that was because when he filmed the original movie, they had to film with IMAX, that fucking like IMAX. What's it called?
The IMAX camera. I don't know. Like they were filming in the IMAX ratio, though. And the IMAX ratio is 2 16:9 screens stacked on top of each other. Like, that's what it is. That's why it looks so cool on that big fucking screen.
Yeah. So it was always, always, always going to look kind of, well, it was always going to be 4:3, even though 4:3 is really, really odd to watch nowadays.
It's not that bad, though. As people that grew up in the 90s, we know.
I kind of enjoyed that it was 4:3 because it was like, oh, this is a different looking superhero movie. I kind of enjoyed the feeling of it being so different and kind of a throwback, and almost like this is like watching like it through a comic book panel shape almost. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt fine. I mean, there are people that'll complain about that, but they're the same type of people that back in the 90s would have complained about the fact that their widescreen format movies had bars on the top and bottom. So,
yeah.
That's just how it is. Once you get used to it, you grow sense blind to it, and it's fine. Like, it really just depends on the screen you're watching it on. If you're watching it on a phone, it's going to suck.
Oh, God. Okay, although, I would not watch this movie on a phone. I feel like at that point, you've truly sacrificed your enjoyment.
Nah, first time I watched it was on my computer monitor because I was watching it with somebody. And the second time was downstairs on my larger television. And yeah, you don't even pay attention to the things that are outside the frame because I'm not crazy.
We actually watched it, Quinn and I watched it on the TV in the scripting room at the office.
That's a good TV to watch it on.
I have a projector screen, a massive projector screen, and I watched it like it was an actual almost little mini theater experience, and the surround sound. It was really good in that format.
Oh, you watched it the best way.
Just so we can get to the part that I want to talk about, though, long story short, I think this is not only significantly better than what we got in 2016 for those of you that were burned by the original cut, like Whedon's cut of Justice League. I think it's worth checking out if you were burned by that. I actually enjoyed this enough to the point that I watched it on my own a second time.
I could not watch the entire thing a second time, but I actually did go back and watch some scenes that I liked.
I didn't watch the entire thing. I kind of turned it on, went and made dinner, and came back out and watched it.
I intentionally... go on.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I intentionally prepared myself for this by rewatching Man of Steel and Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, the Ultimate Cut, which is still a ridiculous title, in the week leading up to its release. And I was like, I want to feel like this was the natural continuation of these films. And I will say, the theatrical cut of Justice League used to be like my least favorite DC movie that had anything associated with Snyder or any of these characters. I think the Snyder cut of Justice League is the best of that trilogy, if you can call it that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's arguable, especially since I have such a very, very, very sour taste for Man of Steel.
Understandable.
I remember fucking Angry Joe shook me physically when I in his own home shit on that movie. I was in his house and I was like, ew, Man of Steel, and he literally grabbed me and shook me.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I'll say the definitive edition or the ultimate cut or whatever of Batman vs Superman, which I also watched, is significantly better than its original theatrical release. But Man of Steel, I haven't been able to go back and rewatch. I have the same issues with it that I did before. I might go rewatch it at some point, but I don't know. I'm very happy with what we got here, though. And with that, spoilers from this point forward, because we gotta get into the nittiest of gritties about this, because there are some things that I do want to dish on.
Also, I want to say, anything that we complain about that was in the original cut, don't care. Yeah, we're talking about this movie as a whole, not just as it's different from the Whedon cut, as we might call it.
Like, I barely remember the Whedon cut, so it's hard to be like differentiate.
I actually, I watched what's his face, Cosmonaut Marcus. And Cosmonaut Marcus actually showed a bunch of scenes from the original Whedon cut and how they were different. And I forgot how fucking many terrible jokes were in that movie. I actually forgot.
Awful. Actually awful. I almost wonder if by bringing in the guy that was working with Disney for a bit, if he actively sabotaged the movie.
I don't know about that, but I feel like he was trying to address some of the the negatives, like some of the criticisms that were made of those original movies. Like when he makes the like, do you bleed joke, I was like, okay, I guess.
I feel like Whedon was brought on specifically because I think there were minds at work that said, we need this to resemble a Marvel movie or this is going to fail. This is going to be...
Yeah.
I think this was an intentional choice. I don't think it was necessarily Whedon sort of going rogue. I think it was actually what they wanted, and unfortunately what they wanted wasn't what anybody else really wanted.
No.
There are still some like weird choices made with this one. Like we kind of alluded to the fact that I have nothing against anybody of any particular faith. You know, if you are using it in a healthy way, if it makes your life better, if it makes you want to make the world better, I am happy. But when it is like blatant and in my face in a film, it is hard not to notice. So this isn't me like complaining about the fact that Zack Snyder is a man of faith. I'm assuming a Christian based on the choices of music and the allegories therein. But when I like that scene where Aquaman is standing there on the dock and just like you're sitting there with this Christian rock blaring at you. There is a kingdom and there is a king and he is king. He is a king. And he's just sitting there drinking whiskey while like it's beautiful visually. But I'm just like, are you going to try to sell me a Ford?
Look,
like, what's happening?
On one hand, I am loath to criticize any film that's just going to just put Jason Momoa shirtless like that in slow motion.
Yeah, like, he's a gorgeous man.
What am I supposed to fucking say? Like people,
although I am admittedly curious why he pulled off his shirt in that scene when he was clearly swimming around with his shirt on in the previous scene.
Yeah, both Quinn and I noticed that. But like, I will say, like, look, Henry Cavill is a handsome man. And damn, like when he was complaining about like literally wearing out the leather on his costume in The Witcher, I was like, oh, okay, that's a bummer. But
that show was literally sold on the fact that that man was in a tub for like three scenes.
I know, right? But then Jason Momoa shows up, and I'm like, it's that fucking jealous girlfriend meme. I'm like, just looking over at Jason Momoa while Henry Cavill's giving me the stink eye.
But yeah, like there's a lot of like really odd music choices and like kind of turns into music videos at certain points.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, they got rid of Danny Elfman's score. And I'm sorry, I really like Danny. I know that Danny Elfman as like a composer for comic book films is often pretty samey. But I missed that score. It was good.
I don't remember the score of the original too much. I do think that the score they had here was pretty fitting, except for certain points. I remember when they were going to save the scientists from Steppenwolf, and there's just this badass rock music playing while they're walking up these stairs casually. And I'm like, what did the composer think when he was like watching this? Like, ooh, gotta fill this somehow.
I assume.
And that just quiets down as soon as they get to the top.
I assume it's like prompted by the fact that that's their first time working as a team, so you need something there, but I don't know if that's it.
It's just such a casual shot of them like very slowly and patiently walking up some stairs, and it came at the heels of like one of those let's go get them kind of scene moments. Yeah. And it's just like, this is not the first shot I expected after that.
Yeah. So gosh, I don't even know where to start, like actually like start talking about the film, because I feel like we touched on some things, but like
let's start here then. Let's start with a positive. How much improved the stories for both Cyborg and Flash were?
Oh my god. Infinitely. Right?
As in they exist now.
Yeah.
I'm so glad Cyborg got a story. It was actually sort of remarkable.
He needed
to me.
One.
He absolutely 100% did. And it's kind of interesting because I feel like it would have been impossible to give Cyborg the story that he really truly needed in a 2-hour movie.
Absolutely.
They couldn't, unless that whole movie was treated as his origin story,
exactly.
Which they weren't going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they were like, oh, well, we're going to have an entire origin film within a Justice League film. You shouldn't do that.
You can do that. It's been done in like, I mean, think about it. Infinity War was essentially Thanos's story.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but you know why that worked. You know why that worked.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Bad example. The New 52 animated movies, which I also went back and rewatched not horrifically long ago. The first movie they did was the Justice League forming. I think this is probably the best example of that. Now, in that movie, they're establishing all of the characters and their place within the world. Among them, the character who's kind of given the most backstory, I believe, is... can't remember that movie too well now, actually. I kind of dug myself into this hole. I'm pretty sure the character that they spend the most time introducing on that one is Green Lantern.
Yeah. Look, but those animated movies also had the benefit of, like, there were multiple of them in succession.
And they are for the hardcore crowd already.
Yeah. Yeah, they're already for the crowd of, like, I know who these characters are. You don't have to spend that much time. They're not trying to tell so much a great story as an entertaining one for fans of comics.
But with Cyborg, who is admittedly, while he is on television, like, in various different forms, on various different pieces, his powers are the most complicated and hard to explain, which is why you also kind of get his, like, these are your power superhero rundown checklist from dad scene, which
was really cool.
Yeah.
Which was cool, like, the way they showed it off and how it works. And it needed to be explained to the popcorn guzzling masses because he is the most opaque, like, the most, like, who is that of all of these heroes that are being introduced? Because everybody else you can explain pretty quickly. The Flash. He's fast. An overcomplication or oversimplification, maybe. We get more on that too. Batman, he's fucking Batman. Everybody knows Batman. Superman, everybody knows Superman. Wonder Woman, everybody basically knows Wonder Woman. If you don't know Wonder Woman, you can look at her and say, oh, she's strong warrior Superman woman, and be okay with that. And that's like an okay example. That's an okay way to explain her to a super layman. Aquaman, he's a water dude. Easy to explain. Cyborg, not so much. So giving him the most development of all the characters in this movie, necessary. And that's why, like, he is vastly improved here than in the Whedon cut.
Yeah. Ray Fisher killed that.
Mm. He really did. And I think you could tell that character's story in a 2-hour movie if you didn't have to juggle the idea that I think Joss Whedon struggled with, which was we need to reintroduce Superman. Because one thing the theatrical cut did that I believe is probably why Cyborg was shuffled to one side, if I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, is that they needed to remind you who Superman was, because Superman is kind of a crux of the movie. Whereas I think to its benefit, the Snyder cut decides, we don't need to tell you about Superman. He doesn't need to be a main character in this movie. He's had two movies. And also, Superman.
You kind of already know who he is. Yeah.
So I think... A huge fault of the theatrical cut is that it spent so much time on Superman and not nearly enough time on Cyborg and Flash. And I understand why they made that decision. But it also is kind of fascinating to watch the Snyder cut and see Cyborg be essentially the main character and heart of the movie when Superman had that role before. And it's just interesting to see them sideline a character like Cyborg for somebody as kind of generally accepted as Superman.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they really go into depth in explaining his relationship to, like, his powers, his father, and how he relates to the Mother Box and how he is actually integral in making sure that, like, this team can succeed, which the original movie does not do. They kind of, like, hand wave it away. It's like, yeah, no, he does machines. He's that guy. So you vastly benefited for Cyborg on this one.
Flash has a very pivotal role, certainly toward the climax.
Yes, and I love the way they expanded on the Flash. I still think Ezra Miller is a bit much at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I know there are a lot of people who thought he was funny, or maybe even like adorkable. I legitimately, like, most of the time, not all the time, there were sometimes I really actually did like him, but most of the time, I did not like Ezra Miller's Flash. And not even because it's Ezra Miller, it's just the writing for him was like...
One of my biggest hesitations about jumping into the Snyder Cut was like, I have to spend 4 hours with that guy? Ugh.
Yeah.
I think of the heroes, he's actually in it the least, admittedly. Aside from maybe Superman.
I think Wonder Woman
he does get a couple of really big, awesome moments.
Yes, he does. And those, like, really pay off. And yeah. I'll actually defend Ezra Miller as Barry Allen here. I liked a lot of the choices that were made. You can't change the script.
Right.
Like, the script is what it is. You're the actor. You go in, you do what you do. So there are things there that, I can not jive with so much. His fast talking, like awkwardness, which can come across as like adorable and endearing, but oftentimes just comes across as, oh my God, please. Which I also kind of think is the point. Like you're meant to want to be like, okay, I just want to get away from this guy so I don't pay attention to him. And that might even be by design on his, like on Barry Allen's part.
Yeah.
So like I can explain that away, but when you see the little character moments, like when he in the scene, probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie, one of my favorite slow motion scenes that I told you guys, or I think actually can compare to the time in a bottle scene from Days of Future Past, when he's saving Iris, or who we're assuming is Iris, from the car crash, and he just looks up and grabs the hot dog and puts it in his pocket. I'm like, my first thought is like, oh, he's the Flash. He has a very high metabolism. He's going to eat that later. And then when they pay it off, because this scene starts with him doing a job interview at a pet store, and he sees that, he has like a stroke of like, oh yeah, I can do that. Grabs that, puts it in his pocket, saves Iris, has that little moment with her, zips back into the pet store. And then while all the dogs are freaking out from the explosion, the woman who was distracted by the car crash looks over, finds him in this little doggy playpen, and he's feeding the dogs the sausage, saying like, yeah, no, I always bring like a little meat treat with me in case dogs get upset, or, you know, because it comforts them.
I can start
Monday, right? And I'm like, oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
I still don't understand why this guy who is like clearly a scientific genius is applying for a job at a pet store.
He has no credentials. That could be an economy take, because he has no experience, no work experience.
Actually,
when in order to apply for these places, you need a master degree, a PhD, and 25 years experience. It's actually, like, well, what?
That actually actively felt like kind of the joke there, because he's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm getting a criminal, criminal law degree. And then she literally follows that up with, I thought you said you had experience walking dogs. And it's like, oh my fucking God.
I didn't hate it. I was just confused.
I will say this. I did not like, okay, so that was another scene that one went on too long. And two was creepy. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
some of those shots were really
creepy.
It did get a little creepy, especially when you realize he's like, you know, he darts out there to save her, and then it's like, okay. And then you realize he's just in full control in that situation. There's like no issue here. He can save her with no problem. I think it's played like it's played off sweetly, but it does have that air of creepiness to it.
She could be horrifically injured
at any
moment.
The rubbing her fucking face part. I'm sorry. It's okay that he admires how pretty she is while he's in that slow motion. Then maybe grabs the hot dog and saves her. But the rubbing her face part? I'm sorry.
He didn't really rub her face. He brushed some
hair. Not fucking okay.
He did not rub her face. He brushed hair out of her face.
It's her face.
He stroked a piece of hair out of her eye.
I qualify that as her face, though.
But
it was not like a, oh, your face, like rubbing, caressing his hand down it. It's a little creepy, but not that creepy.
It's not that creepy because it's in a superhero context and it's exaggerated fantasy, but it is still strange that in a situation where she is completely compromised and he is in total control and she can't even perceive what he's doing, he takes a moment to be like, you're pretty.
I like in that context, it is creepy. It is just not the lady rub face creepy. It's I'm going to preen you. You're like, you know, I'm gonna move that piece of hair out of your way. Like, you know, you're perfect. I'm gonna protect you. I'll, you know, wrap your hands around you.
I'm sure there's
a part
of it that comes off as sort of romantic. But for me, I was like,
yeah, but
very briefly, it was like, huh?
One thing I want to say about the entire film, and this scene is kind of like a distillation of that. There are too many fucking scenes in this whole goddamn film that would have been okay, tolerable even, if it weren't for the fact that Snyder just takes these slow motion scenes, or even just regular motion scenes, and then makes them 40% longer than they need to be. 40% longer than they actually need to be.
That's like complaining about explosions in a Michael Bay movie.
Top of the hour that I don't like Zack Snyder.
I know. But like that complaint kind of goes as a given when you're talking about a Snyder film. It's
It was exceptionally present here, though, because a lot of this film is in slow motion, typical Snyder, but then the flash sequences went from slow motion to super slow motion.
Yeah. I will say there were
Which really works for the Flash.
Yes, it works for him. There were actually many sequences throughout the film that if they had been more isolated, if this hadn't been a film chock full of unnecessary slow motion, that the scenes with the necessary slow motion, with all those cool shots, the ones that actually really benefited
like,
from them.
Like Wonder Woman blocking all the bullets in front of the, not even hostages, but, you know, victims.
Yeah, there were plenty of shots where I'm like, okay, the slow motion really helps this scene. There were also a million of them like, okay, this is just, you were making what could have been a 3.5 hour long miniseries, and this is how you're making it a 4 fucking hour miniseries. By literally doubling the time for these scenes with the excessive slow-mo. It's like, good lord, dude, have some constraint.
that's just the vision he had in mind. He wanted to play out every beat. Some of them feel extraneous and unnecessary. One that you and I actually had kind of a disagreement on yesterday was the first time that Bruce finds Aquaman. And he's like, you know, talking to him at that village that he just, you know, provided food for. Mm-hmm. There's that scene where the girls just kind of sing like a chorus, because clearly Aquaman has been showing up here for a long time and they see him as literally a deity. And, you know, as he proceeds to go underwater, they're singing this beautiful kind of haunting song, this hymn to the Aquaman. And that scene goes on probably too long for a lot of people's tastes, but it really, really plays to the fact that, yeah, these people in this movie are gods. Like, they are gods to these people. And I think the part that maybe could have been cut is the girl walking up, grabbing his sweater and taking a nice big...
But who wouldn't? Ooh,
maybe a little... I mean,
Martin's right. Shut up.
Like, admittedly, you know that's going to happen. Don't know about it being necessary in the movie, but...
Yeah, well, but yeah...
It's implied!
I have to agree. The song... I'm sorry. The song. No! Like, I kind of get it from the idea of, like, you have this small village in wherever the fuck that is. Like, I...
Norwandanavia.
Yeah, Norwandanavia. Like, I'm okay with the idea of, like, yeah, these people ultimately kind of look at him as what he essentially is. Is it Iceland?
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if it were Iceland.
Not green enough for Iceland.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But, like, I wouldn't be too surprised at all, like, if there were a culture out there that literally worshipped him, that had a song for him. It's just the way that it's framed and filmed and introduced is really weird to me. Like, I legitimately was like, this, what? Like, if it doesn't feel natural, or doesn't at least feel interesting, and rather feels awkward and weird, which I legitimately felt like it did, it just didn't work. Like, it just didn't, like, I didn't hate it, because I was able to at least process in my brain. I was able to process, okay, I know what's happening. I know what's going on here. But it still didn't make it feel any less, like, awkward for me.
Yeah, it's this thing where, and it also comes with the context of, they have this hymn for him and they sing to him, even though, like, he's probably only been around for like 10 years. So they developed this ritual within 10 years.
I mean, that actually, the 10 years, God, I would have given it
it's enough time.
I'd say like a fucking a couple of months, and these girls would have been like,
oh man, I got to sing to the hot man.
Hey.
Maybe he'll look at us sometime. I hope he leaves his sweater again.
you know he knows.
Oh, he absolutely knows.
Like, but yeah, like I could at least appreciate. By the way, I also really like that in this version of the film, it really leans heavily into Bruce realizing I was a fucking idiot. And I need to actually, like, I need to get a group together to protect the world, because my actions led to the death of one of the best heroes we possibly could have had.
Yeah.
Our best defensive deterrent.
Yeah.
He's humbled.
Oh my God, we completely skipped the 5-minute whale.
Oh yeah. With the mother boxes waking, the mother box waking up and everything.
Yeah, so unlike the Whedon cut, which starts with that weird cut, like that weird cell phone footage of Hair Lip Superman, Digi Lip Superman even. and then cuts straight to Batman fighting a parademon in Gotham City. Just being like, I need to put together a team. This one actually expands on it and shows that, like, Superman screaming, apparently the mother boxes all around the world recognize that the Kryptonian died and all start waking up. Which, yeah, much better way to set up the fact that your villains now know to attack. And then Steppenwolf shows up and, oh boy, he also vastly benefited from this cut.
Oh, yeah. Like, damn. Steppenwolf is an actual character with an actual purpose now. Holy fuck.
Before he was just... gibberish spouting.
Yeah, and the scenes with him are, wait, yeah, just gibberish spouting ogre man.
It's insane to me that by making him a lackey slash, like, by making him less of his own character and more, tied into Darkseid and that lore, actually made him a better character.
Way better.
That's nuts.
It gave him motivation. Like, yeah. You know, they let him say, look, I just want to go home. Can Dad let me come home?
Daddy,
I'm sorry I sassed.
It's really interesting because they never really go into what he did to make him so shamed. And in the theatrical cut, it is gone into because we see in that flashback when Steppenwolf comes down to try and do what he's doing in this movie, he gets defeated. Whereas in this cut, that is now Darkseid. So his original reasoning for being the shamed henchman is gone, but we still feel what he's going through because we get to spend so much time with him. So as a character, yeah, he's infinitely more fleshed out, and he becomes almost a highlight of the film because you've never really seen somebody with those emotions on the side of the bad guys really gone into to that length.
You actually kind of sympathize with him at times, like when Darkseid finally shows up and talks to him, when Senpai notices, and he immediately sheds all of his, like, all of the top part of his armor and just, like, goes to his knees and just, like, starts groveling. You're like, oh, wow, look at him. He has feelings. I mean, he's still a absolute monster, but wow.
Yeah. And that's really interesting because it humanizes him. And which is really important. The fact that while he might be a less independent character, that doesn't, you don't even recognize that because now you can see that he is a more, like, rounded, understandable, even close to, but not exactly sympathetic character. You just, as you said, you understand his motivations now. And that's so much better.
It's a great contrast to the Justice League themselves because the theme of this Snyder Cut is union, is unity. Like, Steppenwolf is trying to unite the Mother Boxes so that he can be reunited with Darkseid. Now, the reason it works for the Justice League is because they are a family. Darkseid and Steppenwolf and Desaad, they're a broken family, and that's why ultimately they will always fail. Even though Steppenwolf loves Darkseid, it is not reciprocated. He doesn't see Steppenwolf as anything with value. Whereas this team that we're seeing forming, even though they don't know each other that well, there's genuine connections there. When Flash talks about how he looked up to Superman, that's all you need to know. He loved Superman. He idolized Superman. There's the fact that one side is fighting, I hate to say it, with the power of friendship, and the other side is just trying to consume power as much as they can. That's why they are the bad guys and these guys are the good guys. And the movie understands that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It a lot of it's theming, while incredibly ham-fisted at times, namely a lot of the faith allegories and things like that, which, again, I don't necessarily have a problem with. It's just very noticeable. Is the theming is consistent, which you can't really say for the Whedon cut. Further, I really appreciate the fact that while I know next to nothing about Steppenwolf as a character, I still don't. I have never looked into, you know, his actual relation in the continuation of DC canon.
Ditto.
I know nothing about him. Honestly, they could have replaced him with a character like Mongol, who at least I'm familiar with from the animated series, and it would have made sense to me. I could just look at him as if this guy's Kratos and he's going in there with his axe and he's just murdering sons of bitches. Like, he's chopping people in half. This movie can get brutal at times in, you know, Snyder fashion. I mean, even Wonder Woman explodes a dude, throws a guy against a wall. You see it go splat. But freaking Steppenwolf Kratos, like, underwater, that fight scene against the Atlanteans, which is one of my favorite bits in the movie, where he just like cuts a guy in half, like just chopping people all the way up, and then he gets like blood pulled out of his face from that was a really cool effect.
That was
I love that.
That was sick as fuck.
Because you see her like start to rip the water out of his face in this like defensive look. I this guy's gonna kill me if I don't do something. Starts pulling the water out, like ooh ooh, and then it starts turning red, and you're like ooh.
Okay, a lot of people who are watching are like, so you probably heard me already say a lot of nice things. I want to continue to say some nice things. The action in this movie is fucking sick.
Yeah,
like there are actually, as much as Snyder's stuff can kind of get under my skin at times, I gotta say, the guy can make some amazing action sequences, and this movie is no different. Like there are like I actually really liked the scene where Diana blocks all those bullets, the fucking semi-automatic.
That's so cool. That was very cool.
That was cool as fuck.
Like you see her eyes tracking the bullets. She's like, I gotta protect these people. Just gotta keep going, just one step at a time.
You mentioned earlier, Scott, about 300, and I do feel like there's a lot of 300 Snyder in this film, and I feel like it's something that's been missing from the previous two superhero films with Man of Steel and Batman v Superman. I feel like he's very restrained by the sort of subject matter that he's working with. I feel like he's trying to be Snyder making a comic book movie, whereas it really with this Justice League Snyder cut, it's a Snyder movie at the end of the day. It's not really it works as a comic book movie, but I think a lot of its strengths do kind of come from Snyder firing on all cylinders. I feel like I recognize the Snyder that I enjoyed when I went to see 300. Obviously, I still have a lot of reservations about it, but I felt the way about this Snyder cut the way I expected to feel going to see Man of Steel, where I was like, I want to see superheroes fucking tear shit up. And they do that in this movie, and they're not restrained.
Yeah, they do a great job. And the most important thing here, you brought up earlier, I think, Kaiser, how a lot of these things kind of felt like how Frank Miller's stuff feels like an Elseworld tale. Yeah. And DC is known for that. I mean, the Joker movie, obviously an Elseworld kind of story for that character. I feel like pretty much every continuation of DC is an Elseworld story. Because looking at this, the way they treat the source material, you know, the mother boxes, while still being like amazingly hyper advanced computers, there are only three of them. The way they're treated are differently in this continuation, as are the characters and their motivations and their origins. So looking at this as just Zack Snyder wanting to tell a story about all of these characters, this is Zack Snyder doing DC fan fiction, essentially. And he has a vision. And you know what? I respect it. I would be on board seeing more of what he had in mind. I want to see his version of Injustice come into pass. I want to see his version of Flashpoint come to pass.
I mean,
I really look, man, I know you hate Flashpoint, but not all versions of Flashpoint are shit.
Well, no,
they aren't all the animated movie.
No, all I was going to say is like, you're right. You're right. Like the fact I won't lie. Seeing this version, of the movie, seeing this take of like seeing his actual take was really like, it's like I said on Twitter, I wish this was the version I saw first. I really do, because I might have been way more excited about the idea, or at least I would have been less like exasperated over the idea of him making more films. As it is right now, I'm more than okay with just no more Snyder comic book films. I'm still okay with that, even after watching this, because as I said before, I still don't think this is a good production. I think it's okay. I think, and I definitely, as I said before, think that it's not only better, but I think it is a consistent, coherent vision. And that's good. That's great. I am so happy that this version is out there, because, like it can 100% just replace that original one that is legitimately just, I gathered barely any enjoyment from. But I still really, legitimately, from the bottom of my heart, do not like his interpretation of these characters. Even if I think that this was a more coherent and consistent product, it is dour. Like, I remember, so H. Bomber Guy, some of you might know him, did a whole thread talking about this movie, and he was really, really optimistic about it and really liked it. And I was like, hey, that's cool. But I remember he brought up, you know that scene where Diana saves everybody. And then that little girl says, can I be like you when I grow up? And her response is, you can be anything you want.
Yeah, that's very much a, she's a god, kid. Like,
well,
I don't want to shit on your parade here, but.
Well, what I was going to say was, if this had been from a different director with a different series of movies, I would have, like, and she'd given that response, I might have liked that. I might have been like, aw, that's nice. But after the last couple of films from this particular director, it felt disingenuous. It felt like, I'm sorry, no. After everything you've given us so far, with your interpretation of Lex Luthor, with your interpretation of Bruce Wayne, with your interpretation of Superman, oh, in this scene, oh, Diana's like, oh, you can be anything you want. I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
I have to take task with that, just, and not necessarily from an artistic point of view, but because of what Zack Snyder's been through in real life, the experience with his daughter, I do believe that Zack Snyder was trying to throw away a lot of the cynicism that he had before. I don't get me wrong, this is, like you said, kind of a dour interpretation of these characters, but I think Snyder was intentionally trying to be uplifting in several moments within this film, like Cyborg's relationship with his father. Like, they mend their relationship, and even though, obviously, what happens, happens. I genuinely think Snyder was coming from a truly heartfelt place, and one of the reasons I admire this film is because Snyder kind of threw himself at the mercy of people. Like, he this is very raw Zack Snyder. He's doing this for no money, and he's doing it because he's truly passionate about it. I might disagree with a lot of what he's saying and doing with this film and these characters, but I have to admire it. And I do feel like moments like that, and moments like where you see the suicide prevention poster when Batman and Flash are leaving, like, those are genuinely earnest Zack Snyder moments where he's trying to reach through the screen and say, "You matter, life matters."
Well,
he's done a lot of great work for a charity that's actually very near to my heart, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And just want to take a quick moment that if you do want to support that charity, definitely do. I send money there pretty much yearly. And just a quick reminder to anybody that's listening. If you need help, seek help. You are more loved and cared for than you think you are, no matter how down you are. I just wanted to drop that out there, because that is a point that inevitably would be brought up about Zack Snyder and his daughter. And like you said, Martin, so much in this movie themed around unity and familial relationships, father, son, metaphysical, brother, sister. Batman kind of acts like a dad to the troop a number of times.
Aquaman's been estranged from his family, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can think of the moment where Cyborg, when he fixes the ship, it's its nature. It was meant to fly. And Batman, like, basically just looks at him with the proverbial head pat. And after losing Robin, like, he has that fatherly instinct in him. And he tells him, so were you. He has that, like, fatherly encouragement to him. And you can tell Zack Snyder's really channeling a lot of those feelings. There is a lot of heart in this movie that people can be very, very cynical about for good reason and bad. I have some cynicism going through this movie. A few bits that I'll want to talk about here in a sec.
By the way, can I touch on a little bit of that? I wanted to, like, respond to Martin.
Sure.
First of all, I want to say that, yeah, I know what Snyder's been through, and I want everyone to know that while I still to this day take issue with some of the things that he said, because he's legitimately, like, for one reason or another, been pretty shitty publicly about how he views fans of these movies, how he views really the characters within these movies.
Really diverting from the point here, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I want to address it because I think it's important that people understand where I'm coming from. I take issue with the things that he's said and done. I also know that he's been through a lot, and I respect that. And I can also respect that in this movie, he actually did try to push a more positive, hopeful message. I can see that. I can see, like, this movie genuinely does try from beginning to end to build up this idea of this found family and doing what's right for humanity. Better than the previous films did. Like, way better than the previous films did. It kind of frustrates me because those previous films that he'd worked on very much throw the idea of working together to make a better world to the side for many reasons. But here, this is definitely one of his most hopeful, this is what superheroes are all about sort of movies. It's just, it's come after a lot of dourness. And the fact that he actively went out of his way to make the score more dour, to make, like, both in terms of the actual composition, like the original orchestra composition, and even the selected tracks, the songs that he used, this still feels like a very Snyder film. And so, like, when I see that scene, it just, it rings hollow to me because of the long history and still the presentation of the film itself.
Sure.
I get it that he's probably trying to make something more uplifting, but damn, why did he take the color palette and, like, turn down the saturation so much if he's trying to make something that is supposed to make me feel anything other than drab? I understand he's trying to go for something realistic.
Man.
I know. And I'm saying that color theory fucking matters. Color theory matters. So if you're going to make everything so drab and dreary, what is the emotional response I'm supposed to have?
I mean, you could be like Whedon and just crank up the saturation and make it a fucking eyesore. Everything was just red.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, the finale. Okay, yeah. Like, legitimately,
yeah, look,
the finale looks better because it's not all drenched in that goddamn red. Oh, God. That was awful in the original theatrical cut. Like, theatrical cut had a bunch of problems, but I'm not trying to compare it to that.
Sure.
There's like a lot of an immense amount of fun stuff in this movie. What did you think about the, like, dark side scene where we actually got our first look at the Snyderverse lantern, and, you know, Darkseid's just down there 1v like 1v a billioning people.
I personally was kind of confused just because he does get taken out pretty easily. I kind of make jokes about this on Twitter where I was like, the first time we see Thanos in action, he picks up the Hulk and drops him with no difficulty, and apparently is not even using the Infinity Stones in that fight. He's just using his brain and his abilities. And then Darkseid, yes, he takes out a nameless Green Lantern and then takes an axe from bloody mustache Ares immediately and goes down and has to be dragged away. Like, that was an odd first introduction to Darkseid for me. As somebody who is not a DC fan, who has heard it, it kind of reminded me of when people get excited about an indie wrestler coming to WWE and they're like, this guy's going to dominate. This guy's going to kick so much ass. He's going to go straight to the main event. And then you're introduced to him and he's a jobber in like 2 weeks. And I'm like, what? That's this guy?
Yeah, he gets immediately squashed by some of the big guys. Got to pay your dues, brother. But yeah, Darkseid does, like, he gets some cool shit. I actually really like the Green Lantern ring moment where he's kind of floating there. It's like, ooh, this guy's pretty strong of will. It's like, yeah, I'll take, fuck, it flies away.
Maybe I'll be a space policeman for a little bit before I dominate the galaxy.
It had a bunch of little fun moments in it. But one part that I think was, like, that amused me greatly was after they won and they got their cubes and everybody's, you know, taking them off to hide them in every direction of the world. The Atlanteans, you know, get it wrapped up by some squid, put it in a well-guarded shrine. The Amazons put it in a fortress with magic load-bearing bricks that will sink it to the bottom of the ocean if they smack things out of the way. Put it under armed guard forever. Humans? Yeah, it's 3 foot hole in the forest to do it, right? Yeah. Like the king dude's even like looking around at people like, this good? We good here?
I cannot believe Snyder had the opportunity to fix that. And he was still like, nah, just on the fucking ground. It's just a fucking, like, a shallow hole.
3 foot hole. Three foot hole. They built a monastery on top of. They did, you know, talk about that later. And of course, inevitably, it got into the hands of the Nazis, like every magical artifact does.
I know, right? And oh my God, I love the way that was visually represented.
Yeah. When Cyborg's telling all the stories and just like projecting holograms around.
Yeah. Man, oh, the film does again, I there are some really, I've been, I can be kind of shitty to Snyder, but there's still some of his directing choices in this movie. Like, I was like, this is cool as fuck.
I do like that there's just a job for some Amazons to just stare at a cube all day until it does something, and then you have to threaten it with your sword until someone shows up.
Oh, and Hippolyta's like almost kind of like, oh wow, I actually get to do this moment when Steppenwolf's like, I will bathe in your fear. And like, I could almost feel like something click in Hippolyta's head. It's like, oh my God, we have a phrase for that.
Amazon,
show them your fear. We have no fear.
Turned to Quinn. I'm like, hey, so do you think they have like certain phrases that they have like responses for? Like when they say
exactly,
fear, what do we say? We have no fear.
Like that is something that they have ingrained in them. Show them fear. We have no fear. Yeah, we got to do that. Now fight him.
By the way, I gotta ask, did either? Okay, so there was one shot that literally made me laugh really loudly, and it was not supposed to. And I'm wondering if either of you found
right
it
through
either
the horse.
Which one? I had to pause like or mute myself a few times in the call that I was watching it in just because I didn't want to distract.
When Steppenwolf is going after the mommy box.
Oh
no! Yes!
No!
Why? No. Why didn't you ADR that in? Why?
I want it. Give it back. I need daddy to love me.
That no fucking killed me. Both Quinn and I started laughing so hard. That was so
funny. I'm
going
to have to rewatch it.
It's that and the look on his face. It's just like, it's so sad. You're just looking at him like, oh no, that poor baby.
No.
As he's being held down by these immensely muscular women. Ugh.
So,
by the way, the Amazon's fucking badass. Like, yep. I say that, like, the entire existence of Amazon, like, Amazons in this, any scene with Amazons have outdone Marvel in any way in having to do one of those fuck yeah women power moments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, say what you will about the style, the tone, but damn, does it like give those huge empowering boosts of fuck yeah.
Sorry, there's a comment in chat that I identify with. I wanted to be one of those pillars those Amazons hammer, not gonna lie. Yeah, no, I get it. I what kind
those,
of
those are some strong women.
Yeah, as someone who's one of his favorite characters in Doro Heidoro is fucking Noi. She's giant
strong,
and she's muscle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, like the Amazons in this, the Amazons, like, look, the DCEU's Amazons are actually pretty great. Like,
great.
Totally. Legit.
One of the strong elements of it.
Yeah. And so it's yeah, that whole scene, although, oh man. I want to talk about something like throughout this film. Did anyone else notice that the CG, you can tell what was the original movie and you can tell what wasn't.
Yeah, like some of the original CG had been touched up, namely Steppenwolf's chic suit.
I legitimately think Steppenwolf looks good here. Like,
it looks better. Like I said, it's been touched up.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, oh my God, look at all this unnecessary stuff they're doing. And I'm like, actually, yeah, he does look a little bit like an RTX demo, like like on the fucking, like on the package. But you know what? Honestly, I kind of dig the aesthetic they're going for with them, and he works in the film.
But there are parts of it that, definitely looked more like a video game where it's like, you got to kind of turn your brain off a little bit and try not to uncanny valley yourself out of it. Specifically that scene where he's fighting all the Amazons started to get really CG, like, ooh boy, like how, and again, that's kind of the like fault of the scope of the movie. I don't think there is a conceivable way with a decent budget that you could not make that entire sequence CG, but it's noticeable.
Yeah, there were a couple of shots that were really, really like, oh my God, that scene where Hippolyta gets back on her horse and then takes off after Steppenwolf looks, oh man.
Man, that horse had to be fucking hauling because they're already chasing people who have been on horseback going at full speed for like a minute and a half at that point. But
they
did a good job of like really showing how strong Steppenwolf is. And they gave us an amazing reaction gif.
It's toxic. That's good.
Yeah.
It's good shit.
So he uses the mother boxes to bring back Superman. That's a big plot point. And I think it's very interesting. I know I've talked about it a little bit earlier, but the way this film handles Superman is dramatically different from the theatrical cut. Because Superman in this film doesn't show up, essentially. I mean, obviously he's in the first shot of the movie, but he doesn't really show up until like 3 hours in.
Yeah, until like three quarters through the movie.
I will say, for a long time, one of my biggest problems with the Snyderverse, or whatever you want to call it, has been that Superman, of all characters, has been kind of miserable and has never really felt like Superman. And I'm not exactly a Superman fan, but I like the ideas that Superman represents, and I like when Superman is handled like he should be. Like, it's always fun to see Superman. Like, I used to watch the Lois and Superman show with Dean Cain back in the day, and that was the highlight of my childhood. But he's never really been presented as the sort of the Boy Scout with superpowers as he usually is in these films. The moment where the Justice League are all standing looking at the Mother Box and they're like, what the hell do we do now? We have this incredible threat coming. If only Superman were here, how do we bring Superman back? And then it shows that hologram of Superman standing up as it pans around them, and it plays the theme of when Superman takes his flight. And I was like, that's the first time I felt like I've seen Superman in all these movies. In that little red and blue hologram in the middle of the table, I was like, oh shit, yeah, Superman is in these movies. And I was kind of surprised that when he does get introduced, it's very almost identical to how he's reintroduced in the Whedon cut. And that was one thing that I was really hoping that the Snyder cut would alter, because Cyborg being, especially this Cyborg, being like, oh no, my gun's gonna shoot Superman, guys, and then they start fighting. I thought that was going to be played very differently, because it seems really hokey that Cyborg would just be like, I can hack into the largest mainframe in the entire planet and change people's information and give an old woman like $1 million in an instant, but I can't stop my arm from trying to shoot Superman. So yeah, I was kind of confused by the way that was handled.
I think the way they played it off makes sense, because Superman, having just woke up from, you know, a year-long death nap, is very confused as to where he is, and he sees these people standing there with weaponry and is just trying to figure out what's going on. He scans Cyborg. He's like, this thing only has a head. The hell's up with this thing? And Cyborg, everybody in that situation is probably a little tense.
Yeah.
Because Superman is the strongest thing in the known universe to these people. And they play him off very well as, yeah, he fucking is.
Yeah.
And so Cyborg, with any amount of fear or hesitation, especially considering that his body came from the Mother Box, and we saw in the previous scene, the Mother Box fears Superman, is going to be like, shit, protect yourself, this thing's going to kill us.
You know what, that makes perfect sense now. Now that I think about the Mother Box element, I hadn't even put two and two together there, that he is made of that thing. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
There's a lot of things that are sort of implied in the movie, which sometimes I'm good with, sometimes I'm a little bit like, is that what happened? I'm a little unsure, and being unsure makes this kind of difficult to like parse. Mm. So like, I'm always one of those people where it's like, hey, look, if I don't understand why something is happening, it could be a little bit difficult to invest yourself. And there are some times in the film where I'm like, I'm not exactly sure why this is happening. I just kind of have to infer.
Which is why a lot of the times they tell, don't show. There's a lot of just base explanation, mostly to get information to the layman. Like when Wonder Woman is explaining the origin of the cubes and Darkseid, it's like, where did she get this information? Because there was not a wall of text in that vault she went to look at. Maybe she just kind of has all this information so that the people at home can know.
Unfortunately, while we did get the Snyder cut, there was actually a scene cut where she picks up a pamphlet on the way in that explained everything that was on the walls.
Welcome to the Temple of the Amazons, aka the Darkseid Anti-Life Memorial Center.
Yeah, they also had to cut the scene where she hits up the gift shop afterwards and It's really sad because there was actually a lot more about Darkseid. And by the way, some people in the chat were explaining something that isn't explained in the movie. So I'm still going to say it's a mark against the movie. But apparently, the Darkseid that we see in the past is before he gets his Omega powers.
Which makes sense.
That makes sense because this is like an ancient dude. And I don't think they ever really explain how this spacefaring race didn't know how to mark that planet somehow and track it. Because he knows, like, they explain in the movie that, oh, shit, this place got the anti-life equation. That's kind of nuts. Guess we should make note of that. Nope, get the fuck out of here. I got hit by an axe. Go, 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 go.
Quinn and I were like, wait, hold up. So first of all, they forgot where they put the mother boxes. Second, they possibly forgot where the anti-life equation was. Like, he may have, it seemed like the dialogue makes it seem like he definitely found it there at one point. And so he forgot? I'm sorry, what? Look, I know he's been amongst a bunch of different fucking worlds, but how do you
for thousands and thousands of years?
Yeah. How do you not write that down?
How do you
when
forget?
You leave?
How do you forget where you got your ass kicked that hard by Ares?
Yeah, and we were actually making the joke.
And apparently they never forgot that he got his ass kicked, but, like, you know what? Admittedly, on Apocalypse, it's probably best not to bring that up in front of him.
We literally made the joke of, like, after he was being drugged onto the fucking, the ship, he's like, erase all records of this, erase all footage. What? I said erase it all. This never happened. This never happened!
Yeah, fucking Elizabeth Warren, Granny Goodness probably like beats that into people's head. You do not talk about that. We don't teach that part of history. There's an unknown world out there with the anti-life equation, and there's three mother boxes. If you find those, then let us know. But we don't talk about why they're there.
That is a detail that makes way more sense when you realize it was originally Steppenwolf in the theatrical cut, because of course we would forget about Steppenwolf getting his ass kicked on that planet. I mean, we'd forget about the place it took place, but they would shame him for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one part that, like, kind of stuck in my craw a little bit. They try to hand wave explain it away by being like,
yes, there was a planet long ago, this unknown primitive world where we faced an unfortunate defeat and lost some other boxes, but before they could, what are you talking about? They cut him off.
Yeah. And I do get I do understand that is, I don't know how you say his name, but Uxus, I don't know. That's not the Darkseid that we all apparently know in the comics as he comes to power. But having said that, you can, like, the reason that comic book trivia, and I hate to go on a little weird rant, but the reason comic book trivia can explain away all these issues is because these comics have been going for decades and they have had to explain everything about why these villains can do what they do, even though they got their ass kicked previously. Like, there is an infinite amount of comic book trivia that you could use to explain any issue with this film, and that's okay if that is what you take from it. If you believe that Darkseid getting his ass kicked as soon as he showed up on screen in this big movie about why Darkseid is the biggest threat to the planet and humanity, like, I understand if you can accept that because it was not the Darkseid that he came to be. But as a viewer, as like a casual viewer who doesn't know all this stuff, I'm like, why are they worried about that guy? Wonder Woman soloed Ares.
Yeah, that's how a bunch of pop culture aficionados, pop culture historians even make their living on YouTube, by making those Darkseid explained, this is why the Martian Manhunter is important kind of videos, you know?
Well, we're being such assholes. Zack Snyder is just trying to give a bunch of hungry YouTubers the material they need to make money. How dare we?
He says, while we make money on a YouTube video.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. That's what I mean. We gotta respect the hustle, all right?
You always gotta respect the hustle. You may not enjoy the results of some of that hustle, but you gotta respect the hustle.
Going back to Superman, and I talked to Scott about this the other day, I am remarkably okay with Superman being kind of sidelined in this Justice League movie. I realized that what Whedon was trying to do with theatrical cut, and I think failed to do, was make Superman Superman. But in this film, the way they use Superman is he's the weapon that defeats the bad guy. He is the atom bomb that you drop on Godzilla in the final act, even if it doesn't work right off the bat.
Yeah, he is the sword that keeps the other sword in its sheath.
And he works. It works. It's an appropriate use of the character. He is that powerful, and it makes sense.
I agree with you 100%. The fact that the film doesn't even bring up the idea of bringing him back until almost halfway, until it's like over halfway done. Like, I'm like, oh, that's good. That's actually good. I like the idea that they're only interested in bringing him back. Like, oh shit, you're right. We do have this as a way after everything else has happened. And then that final act can happen where he's back. It's crazy, but he's back. And now, okay, so can I? So
God,
yeah,
they,
I,
God,
I,
they make him. God, they make him seem so strong, and it's so fucking cool. Mm. Like, there's a lot of fuck yeah Superman moments.
Actually, that's also one of the reasons I'm glad they saved him to the end, because so when he comes back and then fucking just shits all over Steppenwolf, like, it doesn't feel like it's not earned.
Exactly.
Like, when he comes in and he saves the day, it's like, okay, yeah, literally all this was building to this. And even then, they still lose. They still lose.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was a fan service moment to give him the black suit, but I guess with his knowledge of the Kryptonian homeworld kind of downloaded into his brain, it also makes sense, because isn't that suit supposed to be something that just helps him absorb a vast amount of sunlight after, you know, being underground for a year?
Apparently.
Like, that's the purpose of the suit, is it's supposed to bring in more energy. So I saw a lot of people asking, why the black suit, though? Why did he choose that one?
I wish.
To me, as a nerd, that's what that is to me.
I would not.
Unexplained, but that.
I would not have minded somehow some sort of explanation for that, because to be completely honest with you. And by the way, I want to point this out. When I was watching it, I legitimately was like squinting at the fucking TV. Like, wait, hold on. Is it black and white, or is this just the common desaturation of this fucking movie? I literally had to be like, no, it's black and white. Okay. I
think that's a little unfair, because you see his normal suit circling in the back a lot, so you can tell which one is which.
Yeah, I mean, but still. Like, it is hard to tell in that first shot where he comes out whether or not it's actually black and white.
I didn't have an issue.
Yeah, I'm also okay with the black and white showing up, although, it would have been sort of nice if we gotten some sort of explanation of why the black and white one, other than...
They explained everything else, but in the scene where he puts it on, they didn't really have a good mechanism to explain it.
Yeah.
Unless they decided to, like, you know, ADR in the, like, the ship saying, by the way, Kal-El, this suit will help you recharge with sunlight quicker.
Fair enough.
Fuck that.
That does sound awful. If that was the alternative, never mind. Because honestly, the only other way they could have done it is when he showed up and somebody asked why the black. And even then,
would have felt like that.
Yeah, that would have felt more like Whedon's cut. So maybe I'm just fucking wrong. Ultimately, it's not even a big issue. It's not. It's not a huge issue.
It is fan service to those who really like the look. To those that don't understand why it exists, it just happens and, okay, whatever.
I will say this. So, I've gone through this entire movie without talking about a certain character, and it's because I legitimately 100%, and I know she's apparently better in the director's cut of Batman vs. Superman, but I hate Lois Lane in these films. Like, straight up, I do not like her character at all.
Oh, no.
I legitimately, like, honestly, the ultimate cut of Batman vs. Superman fixes a lot of the issues that you have with her.
Really?
Yeah. Legitimately.
What does it do? Because
it gives her a story. It actually lets her have her plot.
But that whole bullet thing is just daft, because it's just so superfluous by the end of the movie.
It kind of is, but it also is what leads to, like, you know, her actually mattering in the plot and her ending up where she's going. She's a tough reporter who goes out there and finds the thing. Like, she believes she's following something big, and she is, and she ends up at the end of it. And ultimately, it's not her that's going to save the day, but she does help flesh out a lot of that plot. And
given that, like, if I'd seen that version of the movie, I might have actually liked her here. But given that I've seen Man of Steel, where she is just, like, kind of there, I don't know. Maybe it's because I didn't really like Man of Steel that much, and so her character just kind of still has that that stink on it. Like, maybe it's just, yeah, maybe it's just the fact that a couple of films that she is featured heavily in, I've just never really liked their stories or their tones or their intent. So when we get here, she's this big emotional part of the story that helps, you know, that helps Clark come back down to earth. And also the scenes like where she's walking and the sad music's playing with her while she has the umbrella. And then she has that heart to heart with Martha. And all I can...
Martha Manhunter?
Martha Manhunter. Sorry. Yeah, which that's a whole other thing I'll go into in a second. Yeah,
I want to get into that next. But there are two more big things I wanted to talk about.
Righto. But at the end of it, I was like, you know what? I don't have any emotional attachment to her. I just can't. Like, I can't. It doesn't work. Like, oh, she's the key, and Clark having this emotional resonance with her. Sorry, I don't feel a bit of it.
Yeah,
not a second of it. I'm like, no, I don't feel any. There is no chemistry between these two.
Zero.
The definitive edition or the ultimate cut gives them more time together and more actual chemistry.
I believe that. I haven't seen it, so like, I can't say.
There's some legit stuff in there. I'm not saying that you have to go back and rewatch it, but is me as somebody that. I'm not going to force you. This is me as somebody that originally like would agree with you on a lot of this. I will defend it because they did try to make amends here, even though it's like post fact. Let's talk about Martian Manhunter because his inclusion felt the most just kind of shoved in there for the sake of fan service.
Yep.
And the part that kind of stuck in my craw the most about Martian Manhunter was anybody who knows the character knows he while he goes by the Martian Manhunter to the public, he has a fucking name. And when he introduces himself at the end to Bruce, he's just in there like, oh, by the way, there are those that call me. I'm like, oh, he's going to give him his name. The Martian Manhunter. I'm like, who the fuck introduces themselves like that?
Especially to a hero who has a history of not trusting aliens.
Yeah.
I am the Martian human killer.
Yeah, what's wrong with just saying my name is Jaan Jones? Like, that's your name. Jaan. Just say that, and you got a bunch of YouTubers out there who are willing to explain, like, this is what Jaan is. He's the Martian Manhunter. Like, first of all, his design is like, if anybody knows anything like about the old Justice League cartoon, if you've seen like a single frame of it, you'll be like, oh yeah, he's familiar. I wonder why. Oh yeah.
I do like how Ben Affleck was just like, get off my yard, dude. What are you doing? I'm trying to sleep.
Who the fuck are you? I'm trying to have future nightmares, man. Come on.
Oh, my God. We'll touch on that in a second, too.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I really want to.
I'm not familiar.
Like, that's the one I want to end on.
Not familiar with Martian Manhunter as somebody who's not really read or seen much DC stuff. But from my understanding is he's been on Earth for a while, right? What?
Yes. He'd already pointed out he'd been on the. He even turns into a character from the previous films.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what was he doing that whole time? Was he just waiting for what?
He was trying to figure out who he could trust. Like his deal, at least in the canon that I understand, is he is essentially the last of his race, and is, you know, just doing his best to get by, trying to like hide away from the people that murdered his people. And it is very hard to trust people, but he can read other people's minds and shapeshift and is only weak to fire.
It's very weird that a character that would try and hide away like that would take the role of like a pivotal military like operative that is like in control of all this, like a lot of the America's military that deals with super, like you're hiding in not just plain sight, but you're hiding like in the like the field of battle, essentially.
That might be the best place for him to hide, though, because then he knows what information they have and how to avoid it, because he's reading everybody's minds around him.
It just threw me for a loop, though. It's like, oh, there's another superhero, and he's been around, and all this shit's been going down. But yeah,
as soon as the errant thought of, I think the general might be an alien crosses somebody's mind, he can be like, well, I gotta go to the bathroom, and just leave forever.
Martian Manhunter in this film is fucking weird. Definitely was supposed to be a setup for future films that Snyder thought he was going to be involved in, and that didn't happen.
We'll
see.
What was his motivation behind giving Lois a pick-me-up? Like, what was his...
My theory there is that kind of like how the Flash had been visiting, you know, Bruce and giving him prophetic dreams or something. I don't know. Or at least trying to deliver messages while running through the Time Force. He probably also did the same to Jaan, who I'm guessing he meets later. So you can hand wave that away by saying the Flash probably explained.
Lois is the key.
Flash probably told him, like, look, we need Lois's help here. We need her in X place at X time or something. Anyway, gotta go, bye.
Yeah,
I see.
I don't know. It's...
That's one of those mystery box things that you like that you hope piques people's interest to tune in again later.
I also sort of feel like it kind of really hurts what was actually a good scene between Martha and
Lois.
Little bit.
Like, oh hey, that was actually really good. Oh wait, that wasn't even Martha. This is weird.
Yeah, that didn't need to happen. That really didn't. He could have shown they could have shown him off, like, you know, turning into the Martian Manhunter in any other way. And it would have probably been better.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing with the budget and time they had, that was the best they could do.
Possibly. Right. Oh, so there was also, before we go into that last point, by the way, the big one.
No, not the last point. There's 2 points I want to go through.
Oh, okay. Well, one thing I wanted to touch on real quick. I was really sad they cut my favorite line from the original movie, but I understand why they did it. I'm not mad. I'm not mad that they cut it, but I'm really sad that it's gone. And
which
it was...
one?
Just save one person. All you need to do is just save one person and you'll know what to do.
The good line.
I loved that.
It's good for fledgling bitch Barry Allen that the original movie had.
Yeah, because during that scene, they're kind of letting people die and fucking Flash is freaking out. I know why it was cut, because they didn't let that happen. They just kind of jump in and it's like, no, we're going to save these people. No, wait, no, like, fuck that.
Yeah, because as I want to discuss, the Flash in this movie really shows how the Speed Force is so damn OP, and I love it. Mm-hmm. Like, the Flash is my favorite DC hero. I love the Speed Force. Anybody that knows me knows I love anything to do with, like, time dilation, and the way they represent the Speed Force in this, I know you don't like the lightning bolts and stuff, but the way they show it off, the Flash is perfect for Zack Snyder with how he loves filming slow motion spectacle.
Yeah.
Because holy shit, the climax of the movie where, you know, the boxes are all reuniting. Everybody's trying to get better, you know, trying to, you know, fix what is going wrong here. And which, by the way, the entire climax, way easier to understand in this than in Whedon's version, which was just a clusterfuck of a mess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Vastly improved here. But when you finally have that last moment where the heroes lose... And, like, you know, Darkseid is there, the unity happens, and they activate the anti-life equation, and you see this massive just woof, explosion, and Barry's like, oh, fuck, I gotta fix this, and everything comes to a standstill. They had played with the idea earlier that when he approaches the speed of light, things with time get kind of wonky, really playing with the fact that the Speed Force can basically... basically have its way with the laws of physics, and he starts running through the past in what is, you know, when it pulls away and he has this kind of like weird run cycle, looks a little wonky, but it, when they get the close-ups of his feet touching ground that starts to reappear under his feet as he's running, it is probably the most visually stunning piece in this entire movie. It's gorgeous. I love that moment.
To be honest with you, it's one of the coolest scenes in comic book films. Like,
yeah,
as Snyder hater over here, that scene is actually amazing. Holy fuck.
He's running through the past and, of course, playing with that, playing with the theme of unity. He's talking to his dad, who he's actually had a scene with that was a good scene that actually gave him some humanity. As opposed to just being a fast-talking, adorkable nerd.
Yeah, I agree.
He is like, I just want you to know, Dad, that your son, he was one of them. He ran with the best of them. And it drew, like, I'm a sap. It drew a bit of a tear to my eye. I'm like, oh, this is so, and the music is swelling and he's running through time. And then you see, you know, Cyborg and Superman and Batman all kind of rematerialize because they got devastated in the anti-life explosion.
Watching Superman getting
rematerialized from his, like, skeletal components outward is holy shit, because then you realize the amount of devastation this blast actually caused.
Yeah, it's super fuck. And also the actual visual of, like, the center of the explosion.
Yeah.
Holy fucking shit.
I feel really bad, because as someone who had no fucking idea what the Flash could do, I had no idea what was going on that whole time. It looked very pretty, but I was like, what is going on?
They teased it previously in the Resurrection of Superman scene, where he's running so fast to try to get that charge onto the cube that the cube lifts itself up out of the water. And even the cubes, or even the Kryptonian computer says, the future has happened in the present.
Boom! that does make sense, because they explain that when Barry Allen runs faster than the speed of light, he goes back in time.
Exactly. So he can, the Speed Force can manipulate time if he uses it hard enough.
He rewound time by running so fast.
I certainly understand it in retrospect, and having gleaned all that information from various people talking about it, but, like, and this is my fault, this is something that I just didn't understand at the time. As it was happening, I was like, this is beautiful, but what the fuck is going on?
I'm sure that is something that the producers that manhandled the studio was like, I don't think people are going to understand this. We just need to change it. So let's just have the good guys win and not worry about that.
Yeah, and that reminds
me. I feel like this scene is just gorgeous. It's beautiful. And I really like the Flash, man. Damn it.
Yeah, well, you've always been kind of a sucker for speedsters.
Yes, I am. And this is one of the best film interpretations of one, in my opinion, despite the character himself being a little much in the script.
A little fucking much.
A little fucking much. But the last thing I want to talk about is the epilogue.
Let's do that.
Yeah, because this is, the epilogue is the thing, because he's been playing with the idea of this Injustice Superman where, you know, something tragic has happened. Lois dies at some point, and he, for some reason, blames Batman and everybody else, and for some reason sides with Darkseid. I have no idea what leads to that. That's one of those mystery box, do you want to know why he does this kind of pitches? And I'm like, yeah, kinda. So we get a scene at the end, which is, I think, entirely reshot. I think this was all added.
Otherwise,
you were never going to get Leto's Joker and Ben Affleck's Batman on screen at the same time. And he wanted to give the fans of his series that moment. I thought it was a pretty cool, like, I thought it was a neat interaction back and forth. Say what you will about Leto's Joker, his laugh is like kind of a creaky door, but it's appropriately unsettling. I thought their conversation was kind of cool.
I liked the conversation, certainly. It did raise questions for me, because I feel a running complaint people have had is, if this Batman kills so indiscriminately, why has he never killed the fucking Joker? And in fact, he says in this scene, I'm going to fucking kill you. Why has he not done it?
Yeah, I got to agree. Like, the fact that this Joker is somehow still alive, like, is insane to me.
Like,
it's
now,
almost,
in this context of this conversation, it's like, I can't kill you because I need you. But it's like, you didn't need him before. You could have killed him.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. Obviously, pre-apocalypse Batman, like, I don't know if it's implied in the ultimate cut of the Batman vs. Superman, but originally he was just kind of like doing his normal vigilante thing, and then Man of Steel happened, and he realizes he is woefully underpowered against anything from, like, anything of Superman's scale. So he escalates himself by, like, you know, he starts branding criminals. He starts going extreme.
Well, it is implied that the reason that he went extreme, I don't know if this has changed at all in the director's cut, but it's implied that he actually goes kind of off the deep end after the Joker kills. And here's the crazy part. Dick Grayson,
yeah,
not Jason Todd,
They do not have time to introduce two different Robins.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know
they
that.
They were never going to have time. It's why they shot Jimmy Olsen in the face.
Also, they shot Jimmy Olsen in the face. Fuck Batman versus Superman and fuck Goyer Snyder's, like, penchant for just being the worst sometimes.
There are characters that this story didn't need, and that world's Jimmy Olsen was one of them, unfortunately. Like, you could have done something cool with them. You could have.
But you didn't have to get them. You didn't have to drive them out of the middle of the fucking Middle East and get him shot in the face.
You didn't need to turn him into a CIA agent and get him shot in the face. No.
Or wait, was that? Or was that South Africa?
I don't know. He was part of the CIA and he was in a desert.
Yeah.
They like the Snyder doesn't care.
But like, if killing Robin is the thing that drove Batman off the deep end, why would he not specifically kill the Joker?
Oh, yeah, yeah. At this point, he has already shown that he is not only willing to kill people, but...
Reasonably, I think it is because the Joker wants him to, and he doesn't want to give him that fucking satisfaction.
Then why say, I will fucking kill you in this scene?
Because this is a this is also post-apocalypse Batman.
Another bout
of bullshit has happened between then and then.
Also, the whole fucking, like... they were trying to get so edgy with fucking the Joker's dialogue.
You reach around.
Like, yeah, and I'm like, okay, we get it, whatever.
At least they didn't put him in a Jesus suit like all the behind the scenes photos showed him.
Yeah, I thought it enjoyed it though. Like from what we got of him in the miserable Suicide Squad movie, the characterization made sense. I could see what Leto was going for. And I did not hate it as I did in Suicide Squad.
Yeah, it was very, very tolerable in comparison. And it felt like Batman talking to the Joker, certainly within the context of the Snyderverse. So I didn't really have complaints about it. It just reminded me that this guy's still alive somehow.
Also, the fact that they did the We Live in a Society just for the trailer meme.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I respect it. I ain't even mad.
Hey, respect the hustle.
I am mad. I have to say, though, there was a part of me that almost got what they were doing, like almost was on board with what they were trying to do in the epilogue where he's like, I will fucking kill you. And then the look on Joker's face, like there's just this shot where he kind of like almost has clarity. Like, oh, wow.
Yeah, he's trying to come to terms with what was just said. It's like he can't mean that, because I think what Leto is going for here is he actually believes that Batman is his friend. in some weird, perverse way.
Oh, wow.
What it makes me like frustrated about is, so I've always liked Batfleck. I don't like the way that he was written in Batman versus Superman, but legitimately, I like him as Bruce Wayne. I liked his interpretation of the suit, the look. The technology.
He makes a great old broken Batman. He makes a great Frank Miller Batman.
He's great.
He honestly could have made just a great Batman in general. I mean it. I think he could have been a really great Batman in general. And it makes me really sad that we never got a Batman movie that was true to form with Ben Affleck. I'm gonna miss that now. And it also makes me sad that we never got to see this Joker in there, because I think that could have been very interesting.
Yeah.
Like I'm okay with it.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's like I'm okay with the Dark Batman movie, and I feel like they could have done it. I think the way that they went about it was. Meh.
I'm going to say never, though, because I think that last thing the epilogue and probably this entire thing in general was not just this is what I'm going to do, like, because I'm not going to do anything again. But it's also given the fact that it was literally the fandom and the cries of people saying, like, we want this, that got this made in the first place. I'm willing to say that this entire thing is just his pitch in one way or another to say, if you want more of this, then let your voices be heard, because the studios don't fucking know what they want to do.
I believe that there is potential there. I don't believe that we're necessarily going to see more films. Just because it is one thing to see demand for a different cut of a film that's already been made, and for people to demand future sequels of a franchise that kind of was dwindling budget box office wise. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a continuation in comic book form. I wouldn't be surprised if Snyder collaborated with a comic book artist and writer and said, I want to finish my vision as a comic book. I think that's very likely. I also wouldn't be surprised if HBO Max were like, hey, Can we make
give him a miniseries?
Yeah, that would be great, honestly.
Like, I'd be down for that. I don't know how you can get, like, you might be able to get Ben Affleck and...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, you could get Henry Cavill behind a miniseries. I mean, he's in The Witcher. Ben Affleck's probably going to be the harder one. I don't know, like, what he's like when it comes to being a part of something that's longer and ongoing these days. But you never know. And I, for one, would be interested in seeing more.
I think there's merit to it.
Yeah, I liked this, and I'd like to see more. That's me. I want to see what they do with, like, Green Lantern and stuff like that before they just wipe the entire timeline with a Flashpoint movie.
I'm more than okay with Snyder never touching another superhero movie as long as he lives. And you know what? To be honest, I think he'd be kind of okay with that, too. To be frank, I think he'd actually be okay that if he never worked on another fucking super... Let him go make his fucking Fountainhead movie, for fuck's sake. Just, like, keep him away from superhero stuff. Like, I would rather get more stuff like Shazam and the first Wonder Woman. Not the second Wonder Woman. But definitely the first Wonder Woman. Than another fucking Snyder.
Renounce your wish!
The biggest issue you find there is the fact that... Like what Marvel did... You need oversight. You need a creative head. And in this universe, that was going to be Snyder. So you need to find somebody else with a vision for all of these characters, a knowledge of the source material that actually means they give a shit about them, which, while you might not like how he treated a lot of the source material, it's clear that Snyder really likes the source material.
Is it? I'm sorry.
I think it is.
I don't know.
I think it is. Like I said, this whole thing is his fan fiction. You might not like how he's treating it with his edgy shit, but he knows the source material and was writing around it how he wanted it to play out. He was doing his version of these characters.
Yeah, there are people who consume.
You can say he doesn't know the source material all you want. You're fucking wrong.
There are people who consume.
He just treated it a way that you don't want.
There are people who consume these characters and this whole general medium and in comic books, and they get a very different interpretation of what it should be compared to what I feel, and I feel like it is just a difference of opinion as to what makes these characters great and what makes them cool and what makes them stand out that Snyder has just gone a different way with, and it's not for me, certainly, but
yeah,
there are people who
really love that
Batman kills people and, you know, goes ham.
Yeah, this is not for everybody. Like you said earlier, Kaiser, this is like an Elseworld kind of tale. Like, I feel like many comic books should be treated. This isn't going to be for everybody, the way it was treated, the way it was written. If you don't like Frank Miller, you're probably not going to like this. I don't particularly like Frank Miller, but I also don't really care enough to not like him, you know? Like, it's something where I can observe it, consume it, and appreciate the parts of it that I like while, you know, just making fun of the stuff that I don't like. That's who I am. I am an open-minded, cynical asshole.
Well, I will say this before we go, because I feel like I put a lot of focus on, it has to be exactly like the comics. The MCU, in a million different ways, is not like the comics.
Mm-mm.
What it does try to do is give interpretations of characters that are close to the spirit. It is very difficult with the long-running nature of comics to produce a character that is one-for-one with the comic interpretations, especially when you have a million different writers. So the MCU definitely tried to keep the characters consistent with their spirit while producing stories that were supposed to entertain and compel. And, you know, most of them did that, which is pretty good. So, you know, when the MCU changes shit, they're trying to at least give you something that is still compelling and true to form, even if it isn't true to the text.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
And that's why. But either way, also important, even if they weren't true to text, I still like, even if these films were incredibly true to what these characters are and their original stories, like, if they're not great movies to me, they're not going to be great movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. And, like, you know, that's what it comes down to. You don't have to enjoy everything. You don't need to appreciate every single bit. I liked it. Mm. I legitimately liked it. But I'm also the guy that liked X-Men Origins Wolverine. So everything I say can be taken with that grain of salt. I find enjoyment in a lot of weird things. And
hey,
sometimes it's in a, oh my God, that's hysterical. Like, so bad it's good kind of way, like with Wolverine. Sometimes it's in a way where I'm just sitting back and like, this guy had a vision, and you know what? God damn it, he did it. And I like a lot of the parts about this.
I fucking love The Last Jedi to death, bro. So
I think that is one that has grown on me as much as Rise of Skywalker has continued to diminish on me.
Oh yeah, no, it is an inverse.
I found myself enjoying all of the Snyder Cut for the entire 4-hour run. I was engrossed, and I wouldn't say that, like, we started this off being like, this isn't necessarily a good movie. It isn't necessarily a movie, but I had a good time watching it, and I was on board way more than I was for any of Snyder's previous outings for these characters. And I was impressed and surprised at how I just wasn't even looking at my watch for a 4-hour mm-hmm. movie, you know? That's baffling.
Yeah, I did not multitask at all. I didn't check my phone. I didn't do anything.
Oh, I was very compelled all throughout. Again, there were some parts where I'm like, okay, we get it. Can we please move this scene? I never lost my interest.
And that is very much in this movie's favor.
Yeah.
But
yes.
What did you guys at home think? Let us know in the comments if you're tuning in on YouTube. Here in chat, we've been seeing you guys do this all the time, like, you know, talking it up all the time over here. If you tune in live every other Wednesday on twitch.tv/stream4star, love having you guys in here live. But whether you're listening on YouTube, here live, or on any of your favorite podcast providers, thank you so much for joining. And I want to reiterate again, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. They are a wonderful charity that are looking to promote mental health and try to take the number of suicides here in America and around the world down to zero. A lofty goal, but you never know. Miracles do happen. And again, if any of you out there are feeling down, please seek help. You are far more loved and cared about than you believe. This has been the TalkCast Pod Show. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you guys next time. Peace out.
Peace.
Take care.